All right, so according to my one sort of good eye, it's November 25th, Tuesday, 2025. Yeah, so we're 2 days before Thanksgiving in the United States of America. We're celebrated as the last Thursday in November, I believe. That's what it is. I think it was Franklin Delano Roosevelt who declared it as a official legal holiday. I think before that it was more unofficial. In any case, that's your factoid, perhaps factoid for the morning. We're going to begin with a period of sitting meditation, just checking to see that I let me get the time right. So we sit for about 20 minutes and then we'll have some Dharma to reflect on. So settling back into a comfortable meditation posture. And if you're sitting, ideally we want to be upright, the body aligned. You can close your eyes or just lower your gaze, turning the attention inward. And so beginning just by feeling yourself coming to stillness. Feeling the body at rest. And initially, just awareness of the external experience of the body, sensations, and having a sense of relaxing the body. Softening the belly, releasing the shoulders, loosening the jaw, and feeling the body breathing. And we use the breath as a primary object of attention, concentration object. Feeling the touch of breath, the nostrils, the movement, the chest and belly. So just sensing the physical experience of breathing. Breathing in, breathing out. We sense these contrasting elements of breath, in breath and out breath. We can use the breath then as a way of calming the body. Connection between the breath and the sensations in the body and the nervous system. We see that by gently releasing the breath, there's a sense of settling throughout the body. And as the body settles, we may become aware of the more subtle internal experiences. The inner experiences that suggest feeling or emotion, mood. Without attaching to or judging or even necessarily naming these feelings, just sensing inwardly. It's more subtle awareness than awareness of the body externally, tuning to the inner experience. And we breathe with this, with the inner and outer experience of the body. Just feeling. Not adding a story or analysis, judgment. To keep that experience very simple. And becomes apparent the connection between these inner feelings and the mental formations, the thoughts, reflections that arise. Whether we're having pleasant or unpleasant feelings. Just neutral feelings. Thoughts tend to spring out of the feelings. So as we practice mindful breathing with the feelings, with the thoughts, we observe this phenomenon and let go. We are seeing the complexity of mind for a few minutes, trying to simplify, be with just the raw components of experience, breath, feeling, sensation. I noticed that we've had a few more people in the last week or two here. So welcome to people who are joining us who have not been regulars. Everybody is welcome, of course. This is a pretty informal gathering. It does often run, it's technically for an hour. It does run over a bit at times. And, my intention is really, I guess, primarily to just be an ongoing support for people in recovery and interested in meditation and Dharma. But I kind of use it just as a place to just kind of talk about whatever kind of where my mind is going and the interests that are showing up for me, and hoping that that those resonate for people. The point being, I'm not, first of all, following a particular ongoing theme, and although a lot of, some do emerge, and I'm not trying to present you with some structured Dharma talk. It's really just as I say, somewhat casual. So, as I said, when I was meditating on my own this morning, I was going through the Mindfulness of Breathing Sutta and thinking about how to I might be able to compress that into a short instruction. And then, as I was having breakfast, it being Tuesday, some of you who've been with me for a while know that, I often look at the science section of the New York Times, which comes out on Tuesday. And so this morning I was like, well, let me just take a look. And here's the headline that got my attention: Mapping the Sense of What's Going On Inside. Was I interested? Scientists are learning how the brain knows what's happening throughout the body and how that process might go awry in some psychiatric disorders. Sound familiar? It's kind of what I've been talking about a lot lately. And it starts out by telling us about a neuroscientist at Scripps in San Diego who discovered the piezo protein in 2010 and won the Nobel Prize for it. And it's the protein that allows nerve endings in the skin to sense pressure, helping to create the sense of touch. And after he got the Nobel Prize on that, he realized, there might be something besides the external sense of touch. What about the internal sense of touch? So this, he says, his research is part of a major new effort to map this sixth internal sense, which is known as interoception. Now, I had been reading about this actually in The Body Keeps Score. So for those who are interested in that topic, that The Body Keeps Score, Keeps the Score. Yes, Keeps the Score. It covers this to some degree. Scientists are discovering that interoception supplies the brain with a remarkably rich picture of what is happening throughout the body, a picture that is mostly hidden from our consciousness. That is, if we don't meditate. Reading this, I was like, these guys need to talk to meditators. Like, come on, man. This inner sense shapes our emotions, our behavior, our decisions, and even the way we feel sick with a cold. And that struck, I don't know, those of you who are, long time, or at least, whatever, engaged meditators may have asked yourself when you're sick, what am I feeling? And that's one of the things that comes up for me when I'm sick. I'm like, what's so bad about this? Like, how do I? And, it's because it's very subtle. You think, oh, I feel so sick. But unless you have like a headache or a fever, if you just have a cold, it's like, again, there's symptoms like, running nose or whatever, cough. But just the overall feeling of the body, it's like, just feels crappy. But, very hard to actually like pinpoint the sensations, which, is also. I mean, all right, I'll read the next thing because it connects. And a growing amount of research suggests that many psychiatric conditions, ranging from anxiety disorders to depression, might be caused in part by errors in our perception of our internal environment. Errors in our perception of our internal environment. Again, for people who have been listening to me, I've talked about this moment I had where I thought I, where I said, "Oh, I'm depressed," and I was driving to Spirit Rock, and I was like, "I'm not depressed. Why would I think that I was?" And it was like, and I came to realize that it was an error of, what is it, in my perception of my internal environment, And boy, that is a real wake-up call for anybody who has, struggles with any psychiatric conditions. Oh, you mean I might be misinterpreting this whole thing? This whole thing that I think is this, is, it might be that, or it might be nothing else. It might be nothing at all. I don't know. It just might be, some strange, something I ate. Someday it may become possible to treat those conditions by retuning a person's internal sense, which again, try meditating. Right. But first, the Dr. Patapouchian said scientists need a firm understanding of how interoception works. Quote, "We've taken our body for granted," he said. "We've taken our body for granted." So just so interesting, and it goes through all these things about, all the things that you feel like, I know I need to go to the bathroom and that type of stuff, but this, the connection to emotions, it's so evident. It's so interesting here. And let's take it over to addiction. When you have the thought, "I need a drink," where is that coming from, right? There's an interoception, my favorite new word, that's, triggering a feeling, that's triggering a thought. And so all of this then connects with the Dharma and the way the Buddha talks about it. The aggregates, the body, which is interoception is in the body, but then there's a feeling associated with the sensed experience. It's either a pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral feeling, and I'm going to come back to that because it's so important. And then there's an understanding, a perception of that, a labeling of that. And in other words, an interpretation of that, which is one of the things they're talking about, like we misinterpret it, right? And then out of that interpretation of it comes our motivation and our energy to act. So I'm acting. There's a sensed, a felt thing that triggers all this whole, house of cards or dominoes, more like it, of feelings and thoughts, and then actions, and then you're drunk, like, or whatever, you're, at the gym, or you could be anywhere, but it all starts with this often unseen, unperceived inner experience. So, meditators, experienced meditators, start to attune to all this stuff that's happening, right? So, coming back, as I said, I would to feeling, to the second aspect of the five aggregates. Let me go through them again. There's body, feeling, perception. That's a labeling, volitional formation, so sort of motivation and action thoughts that form out of it, and consciousness. So feeling, it's This is something I've been, talk about a lot these days, but it bears repeating, as they say. The Buddha isn't really concerned about whether you are happy, sad, anxious, all these things that would be talked about in an article like this. All he's concerned about is, are you finding this pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? Which is, at first when we see that, it's kind of like, well, that's it? But he's really like, it's almost like, I don't, there's no sort of text on this, but we could infer that it's almost like he's saying, don't pay attention to the other characteristics of your experience, because they're not the key to your freedom, to your ending suffering. The key is that the pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral aspect of, let's just say, your inner experience triggers a grasping for wanting more of the pleasant, an aversion trying to get away from the unpleasant, or an ignorance and not knowing anything's happening to the neutral. And those, it's those three qualities that lead on to suffering. And this is in the, I talk about these things a lot, and but just to say that connection between the pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, and the arising of craving, or the arising of ultimately arising of suffering, is in the teaching on dependent origination, and it's the key point in that process that the Buddha describes, which is essentially a breakdown of how we get to su how does suffering arise, and how can we find a way out of it. And it's this spot when we realize this is unpleasant. Okay, I don't have to do anything with that. I don't have to fix it. I don't have to make it go away. I can be with it. I can just use my breath and allow it to be there, and allow it to come, allow it to go. That's the stepping out. If, on the other hand, I feel it unpleasant, and I'm like, the whole range of what responses I can have to that, right? It could be, this is really bad. I got to get rid of it. I need to fix it. Or oftentimes, we have just the experience of what's wrong with me, and that a ju as a judgment, not asking for the diagnosis, but saying to myself, there is something wrong with me that I'm having this feeling. I shouldn't have this feeling. So that's aversion. That's a variety of forms of aversion, and that's this that when as that story forms, then I start to play it out. And is there something wrong with me? Is there something wrong with feeling bad? Should people never feel bad? Is that a flaw? No, of course not. F pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral are inevitable experiences of having senses, of being able to sense things. And so the wise response to experiencing pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral is to say, hello, how are you? And let's move on with the next wholesome and skillful action in my day, in my life. I don't have to be triggered by these pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral feelings. But as this article suggests, most of the time, most people are not aware of the vedana of their interoception. So vedana is the feeling, the Buddhist term for the feeling, the pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral feeling. So because we don't see it, we just react to it. And oftentimes, as is suggested there, we don't even know what it is. I mean, have you ever had a feeling that you thought you were like getting sick, or you thought there was something wrong, or that you thought you were getting enlightened, or you thought, something, and then you realized, oh, I that was wrong. I got that wrong. Of course, we don't, things are happening. And this is like, again, what these scientists are going, they're like, what is this stuff? We don't, it's very subtle. It's going on, in this complex system, the vagus nerve, and all that stuff. And nobody, there's no training for this, right? There's no human training. That our training is whatever our upbringing and our culture and the science that we're exposed to and what people say to us, and then our own putting all that together and interpreting it. And so, I mean, interestingly, right, we live in a society, in a culture, in, I believe all of you are, I don't know if you're all in the United States, but in Western contemporary culture, we have a way of interpreting and defining feelings and experiences that in other societies at different times and in indigenous cultures might interpret them completely differently. Might say that when you describe something you're experiencing, they might say, oh, well, that's, your ancestors are showing up, or that's a demon that's showing up, or that's an angel. Just as valid, right? Or take a just science, Chinese medicine, right? Like a whole different way of interpreting this, the nervous system, and the chi, it's all chi, or in Hinduism, pranayama, it's breath. It just to realize that we're so conditioned. I know. So for me, this goes back to I was raised in a family of, quote, depressives, and everybody in my family was depressed. I was the youngest, so I was like, well, I'm going to be depressed when I grow up. And when I first felt bad, when I felt some unpleasant interoceptive experience at 14, I said to myself, I'm depressed. That's really cool. Now I must be an adult. So, the mind, the perception, the interpretation, the story, it all flows out of this just simple internal experience that's interpreted and understood in a certain way. And what happens then, and again, things I've been talking about so much, is that a feedback loop starts. When you have the thought and the judgment and the naming of the unpleasant interoceptive experience, that triggers another interoceptive experience, which is also unpleasant. And so this feedback loop starts. You start thinking about it more, the story concern. And then you create this whole thing, which is called I. I am. I'm walking around with this fucking concrete thing that is I. Just like, what a weight. Oh, God. So again, it's interesting. I mean, this is kind of where I'm at with my own work, because I'm maybe writing a book about depression. Still waiting to hear from the editor to see if they're really gonna, publish it. But trying to go beyond the trying to pull in things other than just Dharma and my understanding through Dharma, because, if I'm speaking to this Western audience about this thing, if I just talk about Vedana and Sanya and, these Buddhist terms, it's gonna sort of leave it up here in this sort of one Buddhist area. But if I can bring it into a Western understanding of it, I think it'll be make for a more complete sort of picture of what's going on. And obviously, as I do this, I'm learning about myself, which I gotta say, it's strange to be old, There's a few of you who know that you're like, wait, like, I'm just figuring this out and I'm probably going to die before I can, before long. That's kind of sad. Oh, well, maybe if I write a book about it, at least somebody else will benefit from what I've gone through. Because, it would have been nice to figure this out when I was 14. It would have made things a lot simpler. Anyway, I don't know if it works like that for anybody. No. Certainly didn't for me. So okay, I'm just looking at what's in that, Monica. You're sticking things, all kinds of things. So you got the aggregates in there. You got something about vein. Thank you. Maybe you can even, if you have a subscription to the New York Times, if you go into the science section today, you can find that article again entitled, such a great, as soon as I saw it, Mapping the Sense of What's Going On Inside. And it is by Carl Zimmer. Anyway, so I will leave it at that and allow people to join in, comment. Tanya,
Hello.
nice to see you. Hope things are
To see you.
good down your way.
Yep, everything's great. It's a beautiful gray day, which I love, with the orange and yellow leaves against that gray sky. So I spent 7 months, 34 years ago, preparing myself for natural childbirth.
Oh,
And
wow.
for the men, I don't know, I was sitting here thinking, what can I compare to that? I don't know, have genitals like stretched in a really uncomfortable way, I don't know. But it was really difficult because there's such a cultural thing about how horrible it is, right? And I knew that I could get, or I was convinced that I could overcome that. And so, like I said, I spent about 7 months. I started with hypnosis tapes because unfortunately I wasn't studying Buddhism at that time. But what I ended up gravitating towards was a spiritual path that talked about exactly what you just talked about, but in slightly different terms. Changing the neural pathways to view it in a completely different way. And that had to be really internalized. How did I, everyone focuses on how big you are and, like external stuff with the body. And it taught me to think about the internal. How do I feel? What's not just how do I feel, but what's going on in there? And really fighting against the negative. So negative stuff surrounding childbirth. And it worked. I ended up having a very spiritual and beautiful experience. And it isn't that there was no pain, it's that the pain was, I didn't think of it as pain. One of the things that I got involved with said, think of it as birth energy. It's birth energy that's birthing your child. It's a good thing. It's a great thing. And it was just such an incredible experience. What I did not expect is how that has continued to affect my relationship with pain. Because now I apparently have a very high pain tolerance. So yeah, it's so much about telling, being aware that when I think I'm in pain sometimes, it's not, I have a choice. I feel like I have a choice of whether I'm going to react to it. Oh no, or just go, like you said, okay, hello, there's some discomfort here, and just kind of ride it out and let it go. So just wanted to throw that in, and thanks for
Great.
your talk today.
Great story. Thank you. Birth energy, it's very intense. I mean, that's like, that's beautiful. I love it. Thank you. Oh, Diane from Whidbey Island. We're out in the Northwest.
Well, Hi.
Hi.
I didn't have my hand up, but
Oh,
I'll
you
just
didn't?
I
Oh,
didn't.
okay. Well, you were just over in the
But thank
corner
you.
there where the van. You were one of the first people to come on today. I noticed that today. So you get a
I
little
was.
bonus.
I just finished your latest book, and I just want to say thank you so much for that. And
Oh,
I am
that's what I like.
one of those mature people who wished I had discovered all this many years ago, but I'm glad I'm here now. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Apologize. I'm so blind. I can see that Abigail definitely has her hand up.
I do, which is unusual for me these days.
Yeah, I haven't heard from you in a while.
I know. As I get older, I get quieter.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Some people are very grateful for.
Right. I know some people around my house would be grateful if I would evolve in that direction.
I have a question about
Good.
the neutral.
Yeah.
When you were talking about it last week, I was totally confused
Yeah.
because I had thought, okay, it's unpleasant or pleasant, or neither unpleasant nor pleasant, which would, in the way my brain works, that would be the ideal.
Right, right, there you go. Just like heroin, right? Neutral.
But
I feel nothing.
exactly. That's so I was confused
Yeah.
about the neutral, about what that is.
Well, I appreciate you bringing it up because I find it confusing as well. So I don't have an answer. But I can talk about it. So, it's under, and this is somewhat based on things I've read and my own experience, which is like Biko Analio talks about it, that when you're having a neutral experience, you tend to try to, it's, people tend to find neutral experiences boring, and people don't like boredom, so they pursue some stimulation when they're feeling bored, which is exactly what. Oh, I'm on the bus. Oh, I'm waiting in line. Oh, but those are neutral experiences. I mean, maybe they're unpleasant, but to some extent they're neutral. And so I've noticed it, particularly on retreats, when I've gotten to a place where everything is kind of quiet, nothing's really happening, and all of a sudden my mind just goes completely off. And I'm like, what? I was nicely quiet and settled. Why did my mind just go off? And when I saw that from Analio, I realized, oh, it's because the neutral is boring. That's one aspect of it. The other thing that's often talked about is that we don't notice things that are neutral. And so we tend to, again, kind of be like spaced out. Like the neutral personality, the three personality types they talk about, the greed type that's always looking for something new and stimulating, the aversive type that's kind of trying to avoid things and just keep it very quiet, and then the neutral type that the it tends to sort of know what's going on, sort of be spaced out. Like, how are you feeling? Oh, I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't really care. That kind of. And so that's kind of what happens to our mind when we're having those kind of experiences. We kind of just drift a little bit. But I agree that in theory, and this is one of Kevin's theories, which is that if your mind gets that the breath is neutral from most of the time. And so if the mind can get stabilized on the breath, then it is neither grasping nor aversive. And so actually that's a way, as you're suggesting, toward equanimity. So the positive manifestation, if we can say there is, of the neutral would be equanimity. The positive manifestation of the aversive is critical thinking. And then the positive manifestation of the craving type is openness. I just made that up, but
It's really good.
it seems good. Yeah, I think it's close, if not perfectly accurate. It's a pretty good. And again, to say out of that comment that, yeah, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral can manifest in wholesome or unwholesome ways, right?
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for asking the question. It's an ongoing one for sure. What's the neutral really about?
It stirs the muddied waters.
Yes, indeed. Mike, hi.
Hey Kevin. Hi everybody. So I'd never heard the this interception into what is it? Interoception.
Interoception.
Interoception. I hadn't heard that before. But
Me neither.
so this is the internal physical sensations, not the mental stuff.
That's
So
right. That's right.
you would still have the Vedana based on kind of what you're feeling internally. So hunger, sickness, those kind of things. So like you were saying before, so the problems might arise from not being aware of the Vedana coming from these internal
Yeah.
feelings.
That's one thing that could happen for sure. And I would say that because emotions have physical characteristics within the body, interoception also does include emotional energies or feelings. I think it would have to. When you say when they and they talk about these types of things in this article, and I think in The Body Keeps Score, like this butterflies in the stomach that are manifestations of anxiety, right? It's a feeling that's it's physical, but we also view it as emotional, and which really, one of the ongoing questions, particularly if you look at it through a Dharma lens, is what is an emotion? And there's not a lot, it's a complex manifestation of physical, mental qualities that sort of, blend together and then get identified and named as something to.
Yeah, we're really getting into that mix of all these different things now. The feelings, the emotions, the thoughts.
Yeah.
Oh, this living gets really complicated. When am I going to figure it out?
I don't know. It's not, we don't have to figure it out, but I think that our meditation practice is meant to help us to be aware of and hold these, what I call energies, but we can call them, sensed, sensed experiences. But as I say, I mean, there's a certain amount of figuring out that helps when you kind of understand, oh, what's going on is not that, something terrible is happening, or, it's just an unpleasant sensation. It's not that I'm going crazy or whatever. I'm anxious and there's this feeling and my heart is beating quickly. That's just, these energies manifesting.
Isn't it amazing how the kind of the wisdom of the Buddha from 2600 years ago, we're still trying to, I mean, it's still so applicable, and we're still finding in Western medicine these kind of new areas that he was talking about so long ago.
Yeah, it is, of course. It's remarkable. I mean, he was a genius, in a way that we can't even sort of imagine. But the thing that I go back to that is so interesting is how much he chooses to ignore. Like, we don't hear a lot about what we call emotions, and that this idea that the pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral is much more important than the particulars of the thing you're experiencing, whether it's a pleasant sunset or a pleasant meal, is not important. It's how you relate to the pleasantness of it. If it's an unpleasant pain versus an unpleasant physical sensation versus an unpleasant conversation, it's not important, that difference between a physical pain and a conversation. What's important is how you react to the unpleasantness of it. And that's like, really interesting, right? He's really sort of going, all that other stuff, don't get confused by it. That's not really where suffering comes from. It's not all those things that you think it is. It's just this pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral quality, and how you respond to that and what you do with it. I find that somewhat shocking, frankly. What?
Yeah, that's amazing insight. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, he never says that. I've never read anything that says that in particular, that you don't need to pay attention to all that other stuff. It's just that if you look at the four foundations of mindfulness, Vedana is one of the four. And the other two are your body, your mental formations, and then the Dharma teachings. So he's not giving you all the details of experience. It's all there. It's all there in the body. I mean, that's what he's saying. You like be mindful of the body and you experience all that and you can focus on that. But he's like, the flavor isn't that important. It's out. It's whether you like it or don't like it. All right, we have reached a time of 11:04, and interesting to see the numbers. I don't know if you guys have any reason to watch numbers, but I noticed that sort of a certain number of people just drop away after the meditation, and then as the conversation goes on, people are dropping away. Anyway, I really, really hope people have a great week. Don't drink or use, no matter what. Get lots of, find the love wherever you can find it. Connect with your friends, with those you trust in your family, and avoid the unwholesome and all of that. So, thank you. I'm actually going to meet with someone who's on here, so we'll be waiting for everybody else to leave. So,
Happy Thanksgiving, Kevin.
thank you. Thanks,
Thank you,
everybody.
Kevin. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you next week.
Okay.
Have fun, Monica.
Thank
Thank you so
you.
much.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you,
Okay.
Kevin.
Thanks.